Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program. 237 in the series. This is November 26th, 2017. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
What's going on?
Everything's good. What's going on?
I feel like
we were just here just a few minutes ago.
I guess it was, really.
We're still here.
Mike Estella's here. And what's up, Mikey?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Very good. And we have Shantae Garth in the booth. And our two sponsors are here, our main sponsor, which is Cat's Pride Kitty Litter. We have Dan Jaffe, the CEO and president of Oil Dry, the parent company of Cat's Pride, is here. What's up, Dan? How are you?
Doing well. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. And we also have Dave Weiske, the vice president of customer success from Oil Dry and Cat's Pride. What's up, Dave? How are you?
Doing well, Carl, Lisa, Mike. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving.
You know what? It was a lot of fun. I'm still digesting a lot of turkey.
And of course, we were here after that dinner, so we were lucky enough to
be
here.
Yeah, we were on the air
on Thursday.
Wow. Yeah. Had a special show, and we talked about you guys coming in, and we had a lot of people send in their pictures of their kitty cats. So we're going to give away, as you do so generously, once a month, you give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. We'll get to that drawing in a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about Cat's Pride and why it's the best kitty litter on the market. You're our main sponsor from day one, has been our sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. And we want our listeners to know why it's the best and why they should switch over.
Absolutely. Well, one thing we're very committed to is we have a research and development center out in Vernon Hills where we have 18 to 20 scientists who come in every day trying to make better and better products, including on the consumer product side, the cat litter side. But now we're really focused on what's known as IHUTs, in-home use tests, where we give our product and benchmark it against the competition to 500 homes and let consumers use it on a blind basis so they don't know what they're using. And we just got the results back, and they were fantastic. They confirmed what we believe, that our products are equal to or better than all the products that are out there on all the major indices. So odor control, clump strength, dust, low tracking, all the key attributes of cat litter. We didn't want to just see, hey, this is our opinion. We wanted to actually put it in homes, and it was very gratifying.
All right, so we know it's as good, if not or better, than anything else that's out there, but there's something additional that you guys do that nobody else does, and I want you to let our listeners know about that.
Yeah, well, you talked about giving away, and yes, once a month we give away a year's supply of cat litter to a lucky listener who participates in our contest. But really, that's just a drop in the bucket of our commitment to giving away. So I've been on the board of the Anti-Cruelty Society here in Chicago for 20 years now. And even before that, even before I joined them, we were donating all the litter to the shelter, which then freed up money for the anti-cruelty to do other wonderful things for cats. Because nationwide, we've got a problem. There are 3.2 million cats entering shelters every year, and only 1.6 million get adopted. So you know the grim turnout for the other 1.6 million.
Sure.
So now we've started a program called Litter for Good. And starting January 1st, every time a consumer buys a green jug of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light or Ultimate Care, they're the ones in the green jug, we will donate a pound of litter to a shelter of his or her choosing, really, because what's going to happen is our consumer base is going to go on to catspride.com and for free join the Cat's Pride Club, and then nominate their local shelter for free litter. And based upon the number of nominations you get, that's how much litter will then be donated on a pro rata basis to each shelter. So we think this program will be successful. Well, really, it's up to you, the listening audience, to do your part and let us know how much you want to save the cats across America.
And what happens is when you do this, you buy a jug, and you'll donate a pound, right, of litter. And what happens is these shelters get this litter. Now they don't have to spend money on litter, right? So now they can spend money on helping get the cats adopted and other means for this money as well, right?
Absolutely. In marketing and outreach and anything they can do to try and find our four-legged furry friends' homes.
I know. I feel like if you are buying litter anyways, why not support a company that I'm not even talking about donation to our listeners? Because like you said, that's a drop in the bucket. But it's a whole mindset. It's a whole passion. It's a whole thought process. What can we do? You are in a position that you can do something, and you are into that, and we appreciate that.
You know, and it's one thing for me, I'm an owner of the company, to talk about our commitment and what we do from a culture standpoint. But Dave, you've been with Oil Dry over 30 years.
31.
And, yeah.
And but who's counting?
Right. And you can speak to the culture.
You know, and it's pretty amazing. So even back in the early years when I came on with Oil Dry, we talked about just our culture and what a great company it is. Because talk about donating litter, you know, recently. It wasn't recently. It was as going back as far as 1987, 88, I recall running the transportation division, and the logistics is we would end up in situations where we had the option to either return the material back to our origin facility or seek out a local shelter and donate litter there. And we did that quite a bit, and I think that really gave us great traction. And that was not just in the Chicagoland area. This is nationwide. So it was up in the New England area, the Northeast Corridor, I mean, which is a very heavy consumer-oriented area, Florida. You talk about the big states. Texas, believe it or not, is one of our big state customers. So the beauty of that was, again, with our culture, we have something called We Care. And, you know, that is really important to us as individuals. And I won't go into the acronym, but it's very important to each and every teammate at Oil Dry. And more importantly, to how we act and help the community and the whole environment.
It's fantastic. I mean, and not only that, but then you have the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation that you donate to as well. And Catherine Heigl is a spokesperson for Cats Pride, and you're about to launch this amazing campaign. Just give us a little quick sneak peek on that.
Sure, and so we're very excited. We're in year two now with our partnership with Catherine Heigl, and she has been a fantastic partner because she is so passionate about animal advocacy. Her brother was tragically killed at a very young age, at 15, and when she got rich and famous, she decided to create a foundation in his honor, and he loved companion animals as she does, and so she started the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, where she was funding it before we came along. She was funding it with all her own money, and then we partnered with her, and every time a green jug is purchased, we actually make a donation to the foundation so she can continue to do her work on spay and neuter and getting cats from low adoption areas into high adoption areas and things like that so that they find homes. So she's been a great partner. I was just up at Meijer last week, and as part of this campaign, we're going to be kicking off in January, where they're going to be putting in 300 quarter pallets in 300 of their stores, and the big placard is going to be a picture of Catherine and our latest talent, me. I use that term talent very, very loosely, but we'll be together on the placard.
And, no
and,
cool.
Yeah. That is so cool.
That's great. Yeah. So we're going to talk more about that as you guys are here every month. And it's a whole brand new campaign where you're giving away kitty litter to all of these shelters all across the country. And all of our listeners can help. Please switch over to Cats Pride. It is the best kitty litter, and it does great things for cats and dogs all across the country.
I was going to say, and it supports the company, the kind of company that we want to support.
Yeah, so please do switch over. Plus, they're our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater, and they'll be bringing you Suspense, Dimension X, and Lum and Abner in just a little bit here. But right now it's time to pick another year's supply winner of Cat's Pride kitty litter here. And drum roll, please.
Okay, we have a winner.
All right.
Danielle Davino from Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Meatball and beef. Meowzles. I love it.
Fantastic. All right. Classic. That is our winner. What's her name again one more time, Dan?
Danielle Davino.
Okay. She's a big winner. She just won a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter thanks to Dan and Dave. And how do you enter? If you have not sent in a picture of you and your kitty cat, do it now. You can take a picture, send it in to us, and you'll be entered for next month. Just send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. We need your name and your city and state. And Dan and Dave, thanks so much again for being here and for being our sponsor and for all you do to help these cats and dogs all across the country.
Absolutely. And if I can, just tell the audience and where they can find this great litter. Cat's Pride Fresh and Light, Ultimate Care, Cat's Pride Fresh and Light. This is the green jug. Look for the green jug, and you can find it, you know, locally here in the Chicagoland area at Mariano's, at Meyer, and at Jewel. But if you want to go online, you don't want to haul it, again, Amazon, Walmart, as well as Chewy.com. We're doing phenomenal business with them. It's just surging. And, you know, I know our listening audience is pretty vast to get down to Florida, and Publix has got it. It's almost everywhere. And with this campaign we're going to be doing, it's going to be so awesome to see us continue to contribute. We think we're going to do roughly 6 million pounds in our first year. That's what we estimate on this campaign.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of kitty litter you're donating then,
yep,
too.
Well, absolutely. You're donating six million pounds.
Oh, donated.
Okay. Wow.
And you said we're almost everywhere, but we're not everywhere. And so the one thing the listening audience can do is if we're not in your local store, please ask your store manager, yeah, hey, where's the green jug?
That's
These guys
right.
are doing great things.
That's right. Absolutely. Very good point. All right. Thanks, yep, guys. Great to see you.
Great to see
thanks
you.
Thanks for all your support and donating to our listeners as well. And when we come back from these words, we will tune into Suspense right here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, it's time for our first classic radio show, and it's brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. It's called Once a Murderer on Suspense. This stars Ben Wright. Part one now of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a story more amazing than any fiction. The dramatized court reports concerning a man who tried to clear himself of murder. A factual document we call Once a Murderer. So now, starring Ben Wright, here is tonight's suspense play, Once a Murderer.
Well, what'd you give it to him for?
I told you, he said he'd lease the place and you give him the keys. How was I to know?
Well, doesn't look like he's moved in yet, anyhow. Thought you said he'd be here.
Groping. Well, that's help. We can get our stuff out before he snigs them.
I'll take the ladder.
All right.
Tools and box are in the corner.
You going to the races tonight?
Oh, I don't know, mate. You?
Oh, not me. I'll lose another farthing on those ruddy dogs and the old lady will bash me head in. Oh, well, that looks like the lot. Sure you didn't leave anything else?
No.
All right.
Hello? What?
Behind the counter. Looks like a shoe. Half a tick. Oh, lovely duck.
Cool.
It's murder, Tom. That's what? It's a murder. Look, Tom.
I know. Look, you stay here and I'll call the police.
Oh, crikey. Oh, crikey. Look at her poor face. Oh, It's horrible.
Yeah, Bert, you all right? Bert.
I don't know. I think I'm going to be...
No, you wait outside. You'll feel better in the air, and I'll get a copper. I won't be long. Bert Shin and I worked for a firm of signboard fixers. Bert was my foreman. And as I told Peggy later that night, I was surprised the way you turned soft all of a sudden. Funny what the look of a dead body can do to a chap. Well, I suppose it takes all kinds, though. Like the inspector at the police station asking me questions about finding the body. Funny way he had. Then looked. Fat. Sloppy.
A cigarette, Mr. Shaw?
Yes, I don't mind. Thanks.
Here.
Thanks.
Now, I'm sure you can help us, Mr. Shaw. Just answer these few questions, if you will. You are 31 years of age.
That's right.
Born in England.
Yes.
And you are a permanent resident of this city.
Yes.
Now, sir, you and Mr. Birchin discovered the body of the young woman, Anna Leeming, this morning in an empty shop at number 75 Bond Road.
That's right.
You went to the shop in order to gather a ladder and some tools, which you, Mr. Shaw, left yesterday.
Right.
Mr. Shin was not present yesterday.
He was not.
Ah. Now, at what time did you leave the shop yesterday?
Well, must have been about 5:30.
Mm. You had removed a to-let sign on the premises.
I had, yes.
Will you tell me why you left the ladder and tools after you'd finished?
Yeah, well, I didn't have the car, and it was late, and the wife and I had a date.
Ah, yes, I see. Did you see the deceased at any time yesterday?
No, not yesterday or any other time.
Mr. Shin, in his evidence, testified that you had given the shop keys to an unidentified man. Will you tell me about that, please?
Well, it's the same thing I told Bert. This bloke come along and said he had leased a place. Did I know where the keys were?
This bloke, how was he dressed?
Oh, pretty sporty. Plus fours. Brown, I think.
Mm. Can you describe him?
A medium height. On the fat side, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Go on.
Well, that's all.
He gave no name?
Nope.
Oh, would you mind using that ashtray, Mr. Shaw?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you so much. But you gave this man the set of keys which had been entrusted to you by the owner.
Yeah, that's right. He said he'd leased it. I took his word. So I'd just taken the sign down on order,
Of course, you thought that he had every right. What then?
Well, and the time was getting on, so I thought I'd leave and come back today for the tools.
Did the stranger stay in the shop after you'd gone?
Yes, he said he wanted to look round. He told me not to worry about my things. He'd lock up when he left.
Ah. Then didn't you wonder at the time how you'd managed to get in this morning if the door was going to be locked and you no longer had a key?
No, he said he'd be there early. Said he'd let me in.
Oh. What did you say was the colour of the man's trousers?
Plus fours. Brown.
Oh, yes, of course. How silly of me to forget. And you'd never seen Anna Leeming before?
Never.
Ah. Well, you have been most helpful, Mr. Shaw. We may wish to get in touch with you again, particularly if, when we find the man who leased the shop. Identification, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, anything I can do to help, Inspector, you just call on me, eh?
That's most kind of you. Good afternoon.
I thought that would be the end to it, but it wasn't. The owner of the shop said he hadn't leased the place at all. He decided to take it over for himself. Well, that left me with my story, the man in plus fours, and no way to prove it. Well, that gave taken me a hard time. Police, newspaper reporters, neighbours, everybody. It kept on like that for over a month, and then one day I got a call from the police to go down to the station.
Oh, it's so good of you to come, Mr. Shaw. We've, found a man who seems to answer the description you gave.
Well, it's about time. Things have been pretty nasty, you know. I lost my job. I've got a wife and kid to think about.
Well, then your identification of this man will clear up any doubts concerning you, won't they, Mr. Shaw?
Has he confessed?
Unfortunately, no. He denies everything.
Well, I expect you won't have much trouble after I identify him, will you?
No, I expect not. Bring in the suspect, please.
Mind if I smoke?
Oh, no, not at all. Sure, match?
No, I've got one, thanks.
Oh. All right, Mr. Shaw. I want you to have a good look at this man and tell me if you've ever seen him before.
Hello.
Well, don't say hello to me. I've never seen you before in my life.
That will do, Mr. Cottle. Well, is this the man?
Yes.
You're absolutely certain?
I think so. Clothes look about the same. Would you ask him to say something again?
Mr. Cottle?
Already will say something, I will. You haven't got any right to warn me in here, like as what I was...
That's enough. You're not on trial.
Well, I've got my right, I have. Not fair.
I think so, Inspector. That's the way he sounded when he asked for the keys.
Mm. You'd be willing to swear to it on oath?
Yes, I think so. Yes, that's the man, all right. He wasn't. He'd been out of town during the week the girl was killed, and he proved it. So it was an unsolved murder. Then that's the way it stayed for 2 years. Oh, the papers forgot about me, the dead girl. You know, people who read the papers forget. But the police don't. And whenever I went looking for a job, there was always somebody who remembered the name Thomas Shaw.
That you, Tommy?
Yes.
Any luck?
No. Part-time work. There's not enough in it to keep a fly alive.
Oh.
How's the kid?
Asleep. You been drinking?
Oh, a couple of beers at the corner.
Oh. Well, come on. Dinner's been on for an hour.
Fish?
No, filet mignon with caviar. What do you think?
Oh, no, look, there's no need to get funny. It's not my fault, you know.
I suppose so. Oh, Tommy, what are we going to do? Ever since that girl... Oh, Tom.
Oh, no, love, I know.
That old cat next door was talking to the postman. I heard her. She said it was a wonder they let a murderer walk about loose.
Oh, she did she? Well, next time you see her, you give her a smack in the eye for me. Or perhaps I'll do it for myself.
Oh, what's the use?
Well, now, come on, kid. Things will get better. You'll see, ducks.
All right, we'll have more of Once a Murderer on Suspense in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back to the show. This second part of Suspense is quite long, so we're going to get right into it. Let's tune in to the conclusion of Once a Murderer on Suspense.
I couldn't get better, though, not until I did something about it. I made up my mind what to do a week later. I had to make it right, and there was only one way. I'd made arrangements for the wife and kids, so I knew they'd be all right, and then I called a police inspector.
Chief Inspector Osborne here.
Hello, Inspector. This is Tom Shaw. Remember me? 2 years ago?
Oh, I remember, Mr. Shaw.
Well, I just called because I want to make a confession.
A confession? Mr. Shaw, where are you?
Don't worry. I'm not going to run away or do myself in.
What is it you wish to confess, Mr. Shaw?
I want to confess the murder of Anna Leeming. That was in July, my confession. They didn't bring me to trial until September. You'd think that a man who'd made a confession would make it easy for him to get it over with. Well, it was raining cats and dogs the day they brought me up to the dock in criminal court. The judge was a nasty old devil, Sir William File, and he looked it.
Clerk, read the charge. Members of the jury, the prisoner at the bar, Thomas Shaw, is charged with the murder of Anna Leeming. And it is
oh, that jury, silly-looking bunch. I'd been on juries. I knew what they were like. Somebody or other always grumbling, wanting to go home to baby or back to work. Call a man guilty so as they can be home in time to go to the movies. I know, I did it myself once. Of course, it wasn't a murder trial.
By my learned friend, Mr. Shakeshaft.
Proceed with your case, Mr. Beckett.
Mr. Shaw, I have here a detailed statement describing how you inveigled the young woman into the shop that evening 2 years ago, strangled her, and then made off with the money in her purse.
Will you show the evidence to the prisoner, Mr. Beckett, so that he may see it for himself?
Certainly, my lord. I call to your attention, Mr. Shaw, an excerpt from your confession. Here.
Yes?
Would you be good enough to read it? Aloud, please.
All right. I lost my temper and put my hands around her throat. She seemed to faint away and fell back out of my hands on the floor. She didn't scream or speak. I knew that something was seriously wrong when she fell back and lost control of myself and cannot remember exactly what happened afterwards.
Yes, thank you. That'll be enough, I think. And that is your confession, Mr. Shaw.
No, I wrote it, yes.
Now, that will be all. And no more questions, my lord.
Any questions, Mr. Shakeshaft?
If you please, my lord. Mr. Shaw, will you tell us the story you first told the police concerning the men in plus fours to whom you gave the keys of the shop?
Yes. Yeah. This fellow in plus fours come up and he said he'd lease the shop and to give him the keys.
You had never seen him before?
No, but I took his word.
You then left the premises and this man within the confines of the shop?
That's right.
Did you see the girl, Anna Leeming, at all that night?
No.
Did you know her personally, or had you ever seen her?
No.
I put it to you plainly. Did you kill that girl?
I did not.
Why did you make that untrue statement, the confession?
Because I hadn't got a chance to prove I was innocent. I wanted the whole thing cleared up properly. I wanted to be arrested and put on trial so I could be proved innocent by law. Then people let me and my wife and kid alone.
It's a peculiar way of proving your innocence to say that you are guilty of murder, sir.
It was the only way, my lord.
That will be all.
Not by a long shot, it wasn't. Mr. Edward Beckett was at my throat for another hour. He made me dizzy with his questions. But when he was done, the judge leaned across and looked over his specs at him.
Mr. Beckett, do you think it possible to convict from the evidence?
I do not think so, my lord.
Quite so. Members of the jury, I've indicated to you through this trial the matters to which you should apply your minds. There is no evidence against the prisoner except for his own statement. It's quite obvious that he's a liar, but you can't find a man guilty of murder simply because he's a liar. I therefore direct you to find a verdict of not guilty.
Things were a little better after that. I got a job or two, the usual. But kept enough in the house for the kid, Peg, then a pint now and again for me. But I was fed up. Men like me want money. Lots of money. What's the use of grubbing about all your life trying to save sixpence here, sixpence there? Now, I had to get hold of something worthwhile. I found it when I met Harriet Vaughan. But she was a widow who owned a flat near the motor works. Middle-aged, but still pretty good-looking. We took to each other like a couple of lovebirds. Of course, I had to keep it dark from Peg, but that wasn't hard. I'd done it before. What time is it?
About 11. Yeah, especially for you.
Oh.
Not too weak, not too strong.
Oh, thanks. Oh, now I've got to go. Too many late nights for me. Peg's going to start wondering what kind of job I'm doing.
You're not going? Oh, no, you're not going again.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Oh, by the way, could you spare a fiver? You see, there's a dog running tomorrow.
No. No. I'm sick and tired of this. For the past month, it's been the same thing. Spend a couple of hours here and off you go. I'm not giving you any more money either.
Oh, come on now. I've told you, Peg's
been... don't believe you. It's probably another woman.
Another woman? What do you take me for? Look here, just a fiver tonight, and I promise tomorrow night...
I haven't got any money in the house.
Oh, I've got to have it, sweetheart. It's an emergency. You don't think I like asking you, do you?
No more.
All right, well, make it £2.
No.
You're going to get nasty.
No more money. Oh, I'm onto your game. It's not me. It's me money, that's all. Well... you've seen the last of both of us.
All right, all right. But for old time's sake, a few quid, a farewell present, eh?
Present? You? Oh, Don't make me laugh.
I'll have to take it myself, then.
Don't you dare! I'll have the law on you! Keep away from my bag!
Now, you take it easy, Auntie. There's no need to get all excited.
You give that to me! You clear out of here. Now!
Shut your mouth!
I'll have the law on you, I will.
Yes, you do. You tell him what a naughty boy I've been. You tell him all about yourself, too, eh? That'll look nice in the papers.
I don't care. You can't make a fool of me. I'm calling the police.
You come back here.
Take your hand off of me! Police!
I don't want to hurt you, but I'm going to have to unless you... Oh, I warned you, now it's your own fault.
All that row about a fiver.
It was spread all over the papers next day. Nobody seemed to know anything about it. The murderer hadn't left a clue. Police suspected a robbery motive, but that's as far as they were going. But I was pretty lucky myself. I took the £5, tripled him at the dog races. I thought I'd give the kid and Peg a present, so I bought a train for him and a new dress for her. Oh, it was a treat to see the tears in her eyes when I gave it to her. Pure silk.
Oh, Tommy. Tommy.
Nah, go on. Take it easy. Go on and try it on. I'm going to set up the kid's train. It'll be all ready when he wakes up in the morning. Eh?
Tommy.
Go on, put it on, eh? Right, you know something? I always wanted a set like this. Huh. I think I'll have as much fun as a kid working it. Of course, it's only clockwork, but it's a starter. Oh, you wait till you see the engine. Peg? Hey, what's all this? Why, you haven't put it on. Don't you like it? Listen, if the colour's no good, you can change it. There's no reason to cry, ducks. Come on, now, try it on, see if the size is right. I like the colour. I thought you would... Hey.
Don't you touch me, don't.
What's the matter? What did I do?
Where did you get the money for those things?
What do you mean, where did I get the money?
Where? Tell me, or shall I tell you?
Ah, now, you're upset. I'll tell you what.
I know about you. That woman who was murdered.
You put on the dress and we'll go out.
I know you've been seeing someone, and I followed you to her flat last night. I saw you go in. She was dead after that. That's where you got the money, isn't it?
You told anyone?
No.
You wouldn't lie to me, would you, Peg?
I haven't. Not because of you, but the kid. You did it, didn't you? Well, didn't you?
Now you listen to me. You don't know anything about anything, understand that? You didn't see anything, did you?
I'm afraid of you. That's two you've killed. You kill me next.
Don't be silly.
I should have told the police. I'll be next, or the kid.
Now what I did or what I didn't do is none of your business. You attend your housework. I'll take care of the... Well, I'm going out for a while and... Don't you talk to anybody about anything, mind? Don't you forget what I say. Not a word. There was nothing else to do. Peg was right. There was a kid and there was her. I didn't want to hurt her, and I knew that sooner or later she'd say something. She had to. But a man's got to protect his family, so... I went to the police. I confessed to the murder of Harriet Vaughan. It was the same court, the same judge, and I had another shock when I saw the prosecutor... I knew him, and I could tell by the way he smiled that he knew me. It was Beckett, the same one who'd been down my throat last time. Ooh, he wasn't supposed to say anything about the other trial, but he had a funny smile as he came up to me.
Mr. Shaw, odd coincidence meeting you again. Now, you stated in your confession that you murdered Mrs. Vaughan because you did not have the fortitude to take your own life.
As... far as I can remember, that's what I said, yes.
And that by committing murder, you would, in that act, forfeit your life, thereby accomplishing your aim of suicide.
Yes.
Would you mind explaining to us your reason for contemplating the taking of your own life?
I said I'd quarreled with her. She was finished with me.
I knew I couldn't go on living without her. And I didn't have the nerve to kill myself.
Will the prisoner speak up?
I'm sorry. I said I didn't have the nerve to kill myself.
And that is what you stated in your confession?
Yes.
No more questions, my lord.
Mr. Lyons?
Thank you, my lord. Now, Mr. Shaw, you have admitted to the writing of the confession?
I have.
Is it true?
Oh, but one thing. I did have a quarrel with her, but I didn't kill her.
Explain to the court, if you will.
I went back to the house to apologize, and when I got there, another man was just coming out of her flat. I went in, and I found her lying dead.
And you knew then that the police suspicions would be upon you because there was no proof of the other man being there?
That's right.
I put it to you, Mr. Shaw. Did you kill that woman?
No, I did not.
Why then did you confess to the police?
Oh, because they wouldn't have believed me, and I wanted to have myself cleared by trial.
Thank you. No further questions, my lord.
Cross-examination, my lord. I understand, Mr. Shaw, that you repudiate your confession. Is that so?
That's right. It's all true about the quarrel, but I didn't kill her.
Yet, Mr. Shaw, you've painted an excellent picture of her death in your confession. Every detail, I might add.
I didn't kill her.
If you wanted to confess to a murder you had not committed, what could have been more convincing at the time than to have put your head out of the window and called the police?
Well, I hadn't exactly decided to confess to killing her then.
However, your description of the murder is graphic to the extreme. How do you account for that?
I could tell by looking at it what had happened. It was just good guesswork, that's all.
Were your fingerprints guesswork? On the glass of whiskey, on the knob of the door, on her handbag? Did you know, Mr. Shaw, that following your confession, your wife came to us of her own volition and substantiated your movements on the night in question?
No. I didn't know.
No. I didn't think that you did. I'm satisfied, my lord. No further questions.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are.
Do you find the prisoner, Thomas Shaw, guilty or not guilty of murder?
Guilty, my lord.
I didn't really think it would work, but there hadn't been any harm in trying. It's the funny thing about a sure bet. If it works once, don't try it twice. Oh, well.
Thomas Shaw, the sentence is the sentence laid down by law.
I haven't been a good father or husband, I suppose.
And it is that you...
How many of us are?
...this place to a lawful prison.
But what I get from these memoirs is for Peg and a kid.
Hang by the neck until
the only thing is, I'm sorry I can't be around to spend some of it.
Suspense, in which Ben Wright starred in tonight's presentation of Once a Murderer. Be sure to listen next week to radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who also wrote tonight's script. The music was composed by Lucian Morwick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Betty Harford, Paula Winslow, Richard Peel, Joseph Kearns, Charlie Lung, Ramsey Hill, John Dodsworth, Herb Butterfield, and Byron Kane. Listen while you work. Dr. Malone is here on the CBS Radio Network.
That's Suspense, a broadcast from November 15th, 1955, Once a Murderer, starring good old Ben Wright. A good cast there. Hope you enjoyed that. You like that, Lisa? Good quality, huh?
It sounded perfect.
Yeah. Mike does an amazing job with the quality of these radio shows. He takes the original transcription discs, and then he does his magic with his no-noise processing and all that. So hats off to Mike Costello. Great quality. Coming up in just a little bit, Dimension X, then the Lum and Abner Show. All kinds of fun stuff coming your way. First, these words. All right. Thanks, Lisa Wolf. My co-host, my Tonto, my what are some of the other?
What would I do without you, gal?
Poncho, and my Poncho.
Second banana.
From the Lone Ranger. Lone Ranger, you're my Tonto. Cisco Kid, you're my Poncho. You're my Jane. Tarzan and Jane. How about that one?
I'll be Jane.
Yeah, Jane. That's good. Yeah. I like that one.
All right. You can call me Jane. You can call me Jack. You can call me Jill.
Well, from the bedtime for Bonzo, you could be the little monkey, and I'll be Ronald Reagan. How about that?
I'll be the little monkey for sure.
All right. Well, Lisa's been my co-host for, gosh, a long time.
2009.
My goodness.
My goodness. Oh, Who else could put up with you all these years?
You believe this poor woman here has been my co-host?
You know, he had some other helpers.
Poor woman, yeah.
He had some other helpers along the way, but none of them have really stuck around. They just all evaporated. They did.
Don't spontaneously combust.
They kind of just evaporated, and I just kind of smushed
my way right in there.
All through thick and thin.
That's true, mostly thin.
Yeah. You are tough.
I know.
She's tough.
I'm just good natured to put up with him. That's all.
After the news, it's Dimension X, then the Lum and Abner Show.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. This is where you can hear all your favorite classic radio shows. Do you like The Shadow? Do you like Suspense and Jack Benny and Bob Hope and Fibber McGee and Molly and Gunsmoke and Dragnet, all those great radio shows? Well, WGN devotes 6 hours a week to these classic radio shows. Lisa and I are here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. We play three classic radio shows on Saturday nights and three classic radio shows on Sunday nights. And this hour, we're going to tune into a good sci-fi adventure on Dimension X. And then in hour three, in the 1 to 2 a.m. hour, we'll be tuning into a good comedy on Lum and Abner. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming film Holmes and Watson, a humorous take on Arthur Conan Doyle's classic mysteries.
Okay, and what do they win?
They're going to get a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Dale in one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, Step Brothers.
Can we turn our beds into bunk beds?
That was one of the funniest movies you've ever seen,
Step Brothers? Are you kidding me? You never saw this movie?
Yeah, I did.
This is one of the most hilarious films
ever. It's not on my favorite list.
It's in the top 10, Step Brothers.
Well,
hysterical.
Not on my favorite
312-981-7200. Who is that actor? He's a Chicago actor, by the way, too. We'll have our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Can we turn our beds into bunk beds?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's turn our beds into bunk beds,
yeah!
Lisa. Yay.
Yeah, we're not going to be doing that, you and me, anyways. No. Paul, hey, how are you?
Doing good.
Great. Good to hear from you. Who is that fine actor?
That would be John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly is right. Did you see the movie? The one that we're talking about, Step Brothers?
I did not, but I know of the movie, and I know it was supposed to be very funny.
Will Ferrell, and it's funny, but not one of the best movies of the world. Watch it again. I didn't say that. I said it's one of my top comedy movies I've ever watched.
It's just not one of the top
three.
Paul. Anyways.
You got to watch it, buddy. Come on now.
All right. I will try. I don't know.
There might be betters. But anyhow, you are a winner.
There might be betters?
There might be better ones is what I was thinking, and it came out in one word. You have won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set, and it is awesome.
It's betters than the other ones.
It'd be better than the others.
Sounds great.
So we hope that you enjoy that. Thanks Paul. A lot.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're welcome. All right, Paul's a big winner. And you know what, Lisa? We never said our text in line.
No, we did not.
Gosh, Lisa needs texts, folks. She feeds off the texts.
No, I need texts so I can read them aloud to Carl, who is unable to see that far.
She loves getting texts.
He
we
needs
both
glasses.
Do. We love getting your texts. Any comments or questions on the show, our text in line, and we read every text, 312-981-7200. Text us. 312-981-7200. Okay, it's time for Dimension X. This was radio's premier series of adult science fiction. It premiered on radio in 1950 over NBC. And you know, Lisa, science fiction prior to Dimension X had really been for juvenile audiences like Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. Occasionally a sci-fi story would appear on Suspense or Escape. But really, Dimension X kind of pioneered the adult science fiction. Almost like Gunsmoke pioneered the adult Western on radio. This was really great. Norman Rose, who was later the voice of Juan Valdez, the fictional coffee grower in the Colombian coffee TV commercials, was Dimension X's host. It had the East Coast's best supporting players, and this particular episode is called Universe. It's from August 2nd, 1951. Here's part one now of Dimension X.
Adventures in time and space. Transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X.
In the beginning, there was Jordan, thinking his lonely thoughts. Out of the loneliness came a longing. Out of the longing came a vision. Out of the dream came a planning. And out of the planning came decision. Jordan's hand was lifted, and the ship was born.
You, look out! Are you all right?
Yes, they missed me.
What was it?
A mutant with a slingshot, I think. It dashed down that passageway.
You want to go after it?
We never catch it, Alan. It's probably 12 decks above us by now.
I didn't think they ever came down this far. Patrols usually get them before they reach this level.
They get more daring with each generation. This one looked like a female.
Male or female, it might have killed us. I told you this trip was pure foolishness. Climbing 24 deck levels to hear a crazy old man rave.
We're almost there now. Compartment X-15, level 24. This is the place.
This area smells as if it hadn't been visited by a sanitation crew for generations.
Part of the ship is almost deserted.
Yes?
This is the compartment of John the Witness.
Who are you?
My name is Hugh Hoyland. I'm a cadet from the scientist barracks. This is my friend, Alan Mahoney.
What do you want of John the Witness?
Only to talk.
Are you a believer in Jordan?
Naturally.
I have heard that there are those among the younger scientists who doubt the word of Jordan.
To doubt is death. We're not heretics.
Enter.
I have brought a gift of tobacco, grown on the richest level.
It smells good.
I assure you it's the best.
Wait here.
What a rat's nest.
Shh.
What the devil do you think he can tell you?
I don't know. Now hush.
Well?
You are John the Witness?
I am.
Good evening to you. I am Hugh Hoyland. This is my friend, Alan Mahoney.
What brings a gentleman of the scientist class to my humble apartment?
I have heard that you and your parents before you have long been keepers of the legend of the ship.
Since Jordan gave the word.
I am anxious to hear the word as Jordan spoke it.
Why?
You see, among the young scientists, there have been some who talk against the word.
There are regulations against such heresy.
Some of them say the ship has no purpose. They say that we're here accidentally. That we have no more grace in Jordan's eyes than the most deformed mutant who dwells in the highest level of the ship.
What shall I say to you?
I wish to hear the word from the mouth of one who knows. that I may become more convinced.
Sir, you have gift for the witness?
The finest tobacco.
Good. I will dim the light. Now, pay close attention, for these are the words as my father's father's father gave them to his son's son's son. This is how the ship came into being, how our people were created. In the beginning, there was only Jordan, thinking his lonely thoughts. In the beginning, there was darkness, formless and dead. Out of the loneliness came a longing. Out of the longing came a vision. Out of the dream came a planning. And out of the planning came decision. Jordan's hand was lifted, and the ship was born. Mile after mile of good compartments, tank after tank for golden corn, ladder and passage, door and locker, fit for the needs of the yet unborn. He looked on his work and found it pleasing, meet for a race that was yet to be. He thought of man, and man came into being. Then Jordan checked his thought and searched for a key. Man untamed would shame his maker. Man unruled would spoil the plan. So Jordan made the regulations, some to speak and some to listen. Order came to the ranks of men. Crew he created to work at their stations, scientists to guide the plan. Over them all he created captain, made him judge of the race of man. Thus it was in the golden age.
These are the true words?
As my father's father taught them.
But what of the strange beast-like people on the upper levels of the ship? Surely Jordan did not create them.
Jordan is perfect. All below him lack perfection. You have heard of the legend of Huff?
I have heard that he mutinied against Jordan.
Darkness swallowed the ways of virtue. Sin prevailed upon the ship. And before wisdom prevailed and the bodies of Huff and his followers were fed into the converter, some of the rebels escaped and lived to father the mutants. They are tainted with the sins of their fathers.
One more question, witness.
Speak.
What is the ship?
The ship is a great sphere, 25 kilometers wide and 100 levels deep.
I know that, but what about the upper levels?
The regulations forbid us to venture into the upper levels, but it is said that beyond the levels of the mutants lies the forbidden place where Jordan's spirit prevails.
So I've heard. But something troubles me. Something which prompted my coming here.
Yes, my son.
What lies beyond the ship?
What?
What lies beyond the ship?
This is heresy.
Answer me.
I will not permit such talk. The ship is complete. The ship is universal. The ship is everywhere. The ship is endless.
Ah, your mutterings are those of a frightened old man. They answer nothing.
You question the word?
I think you lie.
Hear me, Mr. Hyland. For what you have already said, I can have your body fed to the converter, your soul launched on the endless trip.
You threaten me.
You, for Jordan's sake.
You think I fear this dried fig of a man?
You, sir, my friend is impetuous. He doesn't understand.
I might be persuaded to forget a substantial gift.
You pig.
You.
Come on, Alan. The sight of this so-called holy man offends me.
No, you shall not leave.
Look, don't try to frighten me with a gun, old man.
Remain where you are, heretic.
I warn you, put down the gun.
No. No closer.
Drop it.
Very well, then. Dip to the heretic. Alan, get him.
Is he dead?
I don't know.
Come on, Hugh. We've got to get out of here.
Now where? We can't go back. They'd feed us into the converter. What's that?
The old woman must have turned in an alarm. Come on, the patrol will be here in no time.
Where can we go?
The upper levels.
But the mutant.
We'll have to take our chance. Listen, that's the patrol we've got to climb. There's a hatchway. Down the corridor.
Quickly. Oh! Hold the way fire!
Up the ladder.
From the outside wall.
Judging by the slope of the deck, about 2 miles. Mutant territory. Come on, we'll try this passageway.
You.
What?
I don't know. I feel as if we're being watched.
It's your imagination.
Perhaps I.
Oh! It's only a ship's rat. Get a grip on yourself.
It was as big as a dog.
Come on.
I can't drag myself much further.
We've got to find a compartment with water.
Oh, if only you hadn't asked him that stupid question.
There's no use going over that.
Why did you do it? Why?
Alan, I've been thinking about it for a long time. And when he began to give me those stupid pat answers, well, I just saw red, I guess.
But who are you to question the ways of Jordan? When you asked me to go with you to visit the witness, I thought you wanted spiritual help. I never dreamed
that. I'm sorry, Alan. I couldn't foresee this. I didn't know what.
Wait. Wait a minute.
Now what? Another shipwreck?
No. I thought I saw something move near that bulkhead.
I didn't see anything.
Maybe my eyes are going bad still. Listen. You ran?
Alan, look out! Where am I? What are you? Get away from me! Alan! Alan! Look out for that knife! Stay away from me! Alan! Alan!
Don't kill him, Bobo. Not yet.
Who are you?
You must forgive my friend Bobo. Like so many of my people, he's rather impetuous where members of the so-called super race are concerned.
Who are you? What place is this?
As you can guess from my leg, I'm a mutant.
Where is Alan?
Your friend is dead. I was not able to restrain my people in time to save him.
Why don't you destroy me and get it over with?
We do not kill for pleasure, Mr. Hoyland, only when necessary.
You know my name?
I read your identification tag.
Who are you? Mutants can't read.
My name is Gregory. I'm a leader of my people. Although we are unfortunate in our heredity, Mr. Hoyland, many of us are quite intelligent.
Why do you live like animals?
We would rather live like free animals than like regimented slaves, as you do.
I've heard that you practice cannibalism.
Undoubtedly, you hear many things about us. We raise our own cattle on the upper levels, and those of our people who choose to farm raise enough crops for our small population. You turn your head. Why?
This one. I've never seen a creature like him.
Bobo is an unfortunate. He was born without the power of speech.
How can you tolerate a monstrosity?
We have learned to live with difference. If we began to destroy our imperfects as you do on the lower levels, there would soon be no one left.
It violates the regulations. The word of Jordan
states... You know, Mr. Hoyland, your people are really primitive and barbaric.
You dare say that to me?
I dare say a good deal more. Let us go to my compartment and speak further. I'm always interested in information of the lower levels.
I won't give you any information.
Bobo, I want Mr. Hoyland in my cabin, please.
Hey.
I advise you to go quietly, Mr. Hoyland. Bobo has a hatred of superior beings, which is unfortunate, but quite understandable. Proceed.
All right, that's the first portion of Dimension X with Universe, hosted by Norman Rose and Mason Adams starring in this. That's a story by Robert Heinlein, the very famous sci-fi author. We'll get back to Dimension X in just a few minutes. First, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 12:35 in the morning. Happy Monday morning to you, Lisa, and to all of our listeners. Thanks for staying up late with us and tuning into these great classic radio shows. And we're listening to a terrific Robert Heinlein story on Dimension X, good sci-fi story called Universe from August 2nd, 1951. Here's the conclusion now to Dimension X.
Enter, Mr. Harlan.
This is where you live?
Yes.
But you have books.
Stolen from your libraries, Mr. Harlan.
Compton's Astrophysics. The Philosophy of Interstellar Navigation. Celestial Mechanics. You have read these?
Most of them.
Why did you bring me here? What do you intend to do?
Do you believe in Jordan, Mr. Harlan?
There is no other belief.
And the trip? I suppose you believe in the trip, too.
Well, what else is there to believe? When you die, your remains are fed to the converter, and your soul makes the trip.
And where does the trip take you?
Why, to Centaurus, of course.
Huh? Well, what is Centaurus?
Why, Centaurus, mind you, I'm just telling you the orthodox answer. Centaurus is where you arrive when you've made the trip. A place where everything is happy and everybody's happy and there's always good eating. It's mythological, of course.
And you believe this?
The peasants believe it, literally, but many of the younger scientists like myself know that it's figurative, symbolic. Why do you ask?
Didn't it ever occur to you, Mr. Harlan, that the trip is exactly what your peasants believe it is? That the ship and all the crew were actually going someplace? Moving?
The ship can't go anywhere. It already is everywhere.
Imagine a place bigger than the ship, much bigger, with the ship inside it, moving inside.
But there can't be any place bigger than the ship. There wouldn't be any place for it to be.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Listen, you know the lowest level?
Yes.
If you started digging a hole in the lowest level, where would that hole go?
Where would that hole... Oh. No, it's forbidden to think such a thought.
Where would it go?
No. No, I can't think about it.
Bobo. Bobo, we're going to take Mr. Harlan to the place.
Where are we going?
To the top level.
But it's certain death.
Nonsense. I've been there 1,000 times. Come along.
No, I won't. You can't make me.
I think we can. Now, shall we proceed peacefully, or shall I have Bobo persuade you? Open the door, Bobo. Inside.
What place is this?
This, Mr. Hoyland, is the main control room. Why, Mr. Hoyland, you're trembling.
It isn't true. There is no such place except in mythology.
Oh, you younger men are so wise, Mr. Hoyland, except for one thing. This happens to be the main control room of the ship.
But it's nothing but a huge room with an instrument panel.
What did you expect?
How do you know this is the main control room?
See these instruments? Using them, the navigator many hundreds of years ago actually steered the ship on its voyage.
I don't understand.
I didn't suppose you would. Your people have been so steeped in superstition and ignorance that the whole concept has lost its meaning. Sit in that chair. Don't be frightened. Sit down.
Very well.
Look up. What do you see?
Nothing but a huge shield.
Watch it for one moment, Mr. Hoyland. You are going to see something that few of us have ever been privileged to witness. Something so dazzling that you may find it hard to accept at first. But it is there. It is a reality. And ultimately, you must accept it.
What are you doing?
I'm dimming the lights. Don't be frightened. Keep your eyes focused on the shield above us. Ready? Watch.
The shield! It's sliding back! Ghost of Jordan!
Well?
What am I seeing?
The universe, Mr. Harlan. The universe in all its beauty. The stars, the planets, the suns, the moons, and the constellations. This is your heritage, Mr. Harlan. The heritage you've been too stupid to see.
But it can't be. The ship is the universe. There is nothing but the ship.
Ah, but there it is. You see it before your eyes, spread out like a canopy of glory. Do you still deny it? Answer me, Mr. Hoyland. Do you deny it?
No. No, I can't. They lied. They lied to us.
Good.
Why did you close the shield?
You will see it again if you're not afraid.
I'm not afraid.
Many times. I've shown this to others of your people whom we captured, and though they saw it before their very eyes, they would not believe it.
Tell me about it. Tell me about the ship, about the universe. What are these things? How did this come about?
Many thousands of years ago, on a planet like those you've just seen, a planet called Earth, a scientist named Jordan decided to build a ship that would carry men from one planet to another. For many years, Jordan and thousands of others studied and planned. And when they were finished, they built the ship. A ship so large that it had to be assembled in its own orbit beyond a place called the Moon. 60 years it took them to construct. And when it was finished, a whole new science had been conceived. Then the trip was begun. The trip that was to land a colony of Earthmen on a far-off planet called Centaurus, millions of light years beyond the furthest planet ever reached before.
How do you know these things?
Among my books are the log which Jordan himself kept, and the records of the journey for the first 40 years.
What happened?
There was a mutiny. A man named Huff led a rebellion of those who wanted to turn back. In the struggle, the navigators were killed, and the crew fell into a state of anarchy. In the years to follow, small groups of men tried to organize the ship for navigation, and each time they failed. Finally, the whole idea was abandoned. And so for centuries, we have swung in space, unmanned, undirected, living in a lost world of our own making, without purpose, without direction.
Why have you told me this? Why have you brought me here? You could have killed me.
Can you guess?
No. No, I can't. Unless... But it would be too fantastic.
Well?
You want to finish the trip. Yes, that's it. What would it take to do it?
A miracle, almost. The crew would have to be trained. Many people, each skilled in a certain duty.
Couldn't you train your own people?
We are too few. Besides, the main drive is in the lower levels where my people are forbidden to go. No. It would mean that both our peoples would have to work together. Our differences encouraged rather than denied.
It can be done. You showed me. You can show others. I can show them.
Can you?
I'll see the captain himself. I have an uncle on the central board. I'll tell him what I've seen here.
And do you think he'll believe you?
Send one of your people with me.
That's asking a good deal.
I'm risking a good deal by going back.
Very well. Bobo will go with you.
He can't talk.
There will be no need for talk. I will write a message guaranteeing safe conduct for a group of unarmed scientists to visit the main control room. Bobo will take you safely through our territory. What happens when you reach your own level is up to you.
One moment. Yes, what do you... You.
Quick, Uncle, let us in.
But this mutant...
He's harmless, please.
Now,
What is this? You're wanted for...
I know all about that. Listen, Uncle, I must see the captain.
The captain? Are you mad?
You're a council member. You can get me to see him.
They'll kill you. You're wanted for heresy.
I don't care. I must speak with the captain. You're close to him. You can arrange it.
I don't understand why...
Uncle, listen to me. The ship is moving. I can prove it. Do you understand? There is a purpose in the ship.
I don't understand what you're babbling
about. Never mind. Just talk to the captain. Tell him I have information of tremendous importance. Tell him I've arranged a truce with the mutants.
A truce?
Here, show him this paper signed by their leader. Do it, Uncle, for my sake.
I don't know.
Please, Uncle. If I'm to die, let this be my last request to you.
Very well. I'll speak to the captain. I'll try.
You say, Mr. Ireland, that you saw this with your own eyes.
I swear it, Captain. I swear it on the word of Jordan.
Let me see that paper again. What do you think, Commander Est?
I don't know, sir. It might be a trick.
I guarantee you safe conduct.
If these things are as Mr. Hoyland reports them, it would pay to risk a few lives.
The man is a convicted heretic.
Still, we mustn't discount his word entirely. He has a safe conduct. The mutant risked its life coming with him. I think we might investigate.
You will do it.
I'll have an expedition outfitted. Dismissed, Mr. Hoyland.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Captain, do you...
Commander Erst.
Sir.
You'll make the necessary arrangements for an expedition. I trust you understand.
Perfectly, sir. Perfectly.
Lieutenant.
Mr. Hoyland.
You'd better halt your men here. This is the spot.
Patrol, halt. I see no welcoming party of mutants.
There will be none. Their leader will meet you inside the main control room.
You don't say. And just where is this main control room?
Beyond that door.
I see. All right, men. Ready arms.
Why do you ready arms?
In case of ambush.
Ambush? Don't you think they could have ambushed you on the way up here a good deal more easily?
You know, Mr. Hoyland, I think you're a muti lover. They have a place in the converter for that kind.
Lieutenant, are you mad?
No, Mr. Hoyland. But most certainly you are. To think that we could be lured up here to be slaughtered with a fantastic story about some mythical control room.
Guns ready, sir.
Lieutenant, I warn you, these people have acted in good faith. If you break that faith,
call the armed mutants to open the control room, Mr. Hoyland.
No, not until those guns are dismounted.
As leader of this expedition, I order you to call them.
I refuse. You cannot do this thing. This is no way to keep a truce.
Very well, if you refuse. Oh, there! Mutant! Come out!
For Jordan's sake, Lieutenant!
Some quiet for comfort. Mutant! Open the door!
Please, Jordan, don't let anything happen. Please don't.
It's opening. Ready, men. Someone's coming out.
Look at his leg.
Horrible.
Steady.
I can't stand this.
Look out! Gregory! No! You fools! You've killed him!
Here come the rest of them.
Fire!
That should teach them a lesson they won't forget. All right, men. Inside the room. Hoyland, you're under arrest as a conspirator in this ambush.
Ambush? You fool. You blind, stupid fool.
That'll be enough. Have you been inside this place before?
Yes.
What's all this machinery?
These are the controls he would have used to steer the ship.
He's gone out of his mind, Lieutenant.
Steer the ship? Who?
The leader, the one you killed.
This ugly mutant?
This ugly mutant happened to be a man of true greatness.
You're mad.
Am I? This man had a vision which could have saved you, but you chose to kill him because you couldn't stand the sight of his difference from you.
I'll not listen to these ravings.
Close your ears. Shut your minds against the conscience that tells you it's wrong to kill, that tells you that your need to be arrogant only proves your inadequacy to yourself.
Shut him up. Don't listen to him, man.
You can't shut your ears. My words sting you. You cannot shut your minds. And you cannot shut your
shut
eyes.
Him!
Don't do this!
The roof. It's moving back.
Look. Let
the vision of this confound your ignorance and blind your eyes. This is the heritage you tried to stifle in your own breasts. This is the heritage of stars and open skies for which men have yearned for centuries. Try to destroy this, and you will only destroy yourselves.
Death to the heretic.
Kill me if you choose. But I say to you that this you cannot keep from our people, that they will seek it out, and the ship will be manned, and the ship will be steered, and there will be freedom and purpose and respect for ourselves. This is your heritage. Look upon the universe. Kill him!
Kill him! Kill him! Kill him!
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension X.
This has been the concluding broadcast in the current series of Dimension X. If you are interested in the continuation of this series, please write and tell us so. Your ideas and suggestions will be given the most thoughtful consideration in determining the future of this program. Just drop a letter or postcard to Dimension X, care of NBC, Radio City, New York.
Today, Dimension X is transcribed Universe, written for radio by George Lefferts and based on a story by Robert Heinlein. Featured in the cast were Mason Adams as Hugh and Peter Capel as Gregory. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Bert Berman. Engineer, Bill Chambers. Sound created by Manny Siegel, Max Russell, and Wes Conant. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King. Ed Archie Gardner tangles with Tallulah Bankhead on The Big Show.
That is Dimension X with The Universe, hosted by Norman Rose, starring Mason Adams. From August 2nd, 1951. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa Wolf. We listened to Dimension X there in this hour on, you know what's coming up in our third hour?
Lum and Abner from 1948.
You know, Lum and Abner was on the radio for like 25 years or something like that. And they were always a 15-minute Monday through Friday offering. And they were, you know, just serialized. And I have zillions of them. But they were not, self-contained. So you have to run, 10 of them before you'd ever even understand what's going on in the storyline. So we try not to play things like that. Same thing with Superman and some of the other shows like that. Vic and Sade's different. Vic and Sade was on Monday through Friday for 15 minutes, but they were self-contained. Each 15-minute feature of Vic and Sade, actually, you got the whole gist of the story. But Lum and Abner, for 1 year, I think it was only maybe 13 episodes, they moved to a half-hour format where they were self-contained in that half hour. And there's only, like I say, there's just a few of them. And we have one of those in our next hour, a half-hour episode of Lum and Abner coming your way. So, you ready for that?
Definitely.
We have a lot of people that ask for Lum and Abner. So
that's why we're playing it.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I want to remind all of our listeners that my book is available. And you know what, folks? I got to tell you, Lisa and I were on the air Thursday, Thanksgiving. We did a special Thanksgiving show from 7 to 9, and I mentioned my book on that show, and I mentioned it last week, and I think this week probably had, 30 people buy the book. Wow, that's a lot. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Now, I'm sure because of Christmas coming up, maybe people are buying it as Christmas presents, but I did write a book about the golden age of radio, and my good friend Martin Grams, who's an expert on classic radio, he's written a lot of books. He and I got together and we wrote a coffee table book, which is a big 4-pound book, It fits on your coffee table. You can kind of.
Well, how do you know how big the coffee table is?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean it, but
maybe it doesn't fit.
They consider it a coffee table size book because it's big, and it's hardcover, and it has we kind of chronicle the top 100 classic radio shows: The Shadow, Boston Blackie, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, Dimension X.
Did you have trouble paring down to 100?
Well, yeah. We had maybe 200 or 300 shows, and we went out to a lot of experts and a lot of authorities.
I don't remember you asking me for my opinion.
Yeah, so we went out to experts and authorities.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm still waiting, yeah. And nobody came to me.
We pared it down to 100. Then we decided to allow people that buy the book to log on to a special website and digitally download one of almost all of the shows, 78 of the 100 shows you can digitally download. It's all part of it. Plus, there's six shows on three CDs, part of the book. In the back of the book, there's three CDs. And it's a big color coffee table book called The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows. And there's hundreds of period pictures of these classic radio stars. And it's available at our website. Just go to WGNRadioTheater.com. It's only $29.99 plus $5.99 shipping and handling. And when you do order it, there's a little box you can write in who you want me to personalize and autograph it to. So if you want to be like one person the other day said, can you put ho, 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 Merry Christmas to... you know, Fred from Bob and Ginger or whatever it was.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I just made it. But it was like that. It was ho, ho, ho. So I'm happy to write that in there and then sign it.
There is a wealth of information in there. There's no question. You can spend hours on each page or you can just flip through and look at the pictures, which is usually how you read books.
Yeah, I flip through the pictures.
Exactly.
And thank you, Lisa, for having a lot of your family and friends.
Well, I had to pay double for each
triple.
Book. Triple. Double. It was very expensive, but you are worth it.
Yeah. Thanks for getting a bunch of books
You're
for
welcome.
People. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for writing a book.
And our Auntie Joyce got one when she was here last time.
Yeah, my in-laws and my parents and
a lot of mom and dad got one too.
Yeah.
But folks, it's available to you if you're interested. It's also available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, places like that. But if you buy it from my website, I will autograph it and personalize it as part of the whole presentation. So just go to WGNRadioTheater.com.
So okay? If they order it now, will they have it in time for Christmas?
Yeah, I generally get it into the mail the next day, and I send it to media mail, but it's tracked as a tracking. And it takes about 5 days. So you'll have it
Perfect.
Within a week. Yeah.
Great.
So go to WGNRadioTheater.com.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 7 minutes after 1 a.m. in the morning here on a Monday morning. We're playing your favorite classic radio shows as we do every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. I'm looking here, Lisa. You know, starting next week, we are going to begin our Christmas programming. Next week, we'll be here Saturday and Sunday. We have
Jack Benny, The Saint, and Fibber McGee and Molly. That's on Saturday night.
Right.
On Sunday, we have
The Great Gildersleeve, Big Town, and The Aldrich Family. Yeah,
Henry.
All Christmas. Henry Aldrich.
So it's exciting. It's a holiday. I can't believe it's December already. That's crazy.
Wow.
It's time to go
nuts,
to Florida.
Right?
I'm going to go to Florida for a week, but I'll be back.
Yeah, well, I wish I was rich.
Yeah, me too.
Gosh.
me too.
Lisa, have fun out there.
I will. I'll call in.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hard time on the phone.
All right.
Well, who will give you a hard time if not me?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, in this hour, it's Lum and Abner, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Hotel Transylvania 3, the third installment in the Hotel Transylvania franchise.
Are you serious? They're making...
Seriously.
A Transylvania 3?
Yeah, and it's the sequel to the 2015 film Hotel Transylvania 2.
Whoa.
Yep.
All right. Well, this this actress. She's also a singer. She certainly is. She's more known as a singer.
I agree with you. All right. I was about to say that, but you beat me to the punch.
Yeah, what do they win? Twilight Zone?
Yep.
312-981-7200. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. You'll hear this actress singer right here.
Take away your things and go. You can't take back what you said. I know.
I want to listen to the whole song now, you know?
Do you know what the name of the song is?
Nah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, who's that singer actress? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that singing clip one more time.
Take away your things and go. You can't take back what you said.
Oh, you're good.
I'm going to sing
a
duet with
like
her. I'm going to sing a duet with her.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk to Cynthia.
It'll be the worst-selling album she's ever put out.
I bet. Thank you for Cynthia, because she knew that song. Hey, Cynthia.
Good morning.
We're so glad you knew that song. Who is that singer?
It's Selena Gomez.
It is Selena Gomez. Do you know the name of the song? You don't have to. I'm just wondering if you do.
No, I just happen to recognize her voice.
We don't know it either. But you are definitely a winner. You have won the Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set. It's produced by Carl and hosted by Stacey Keach. And it is coming your way. So congratulations and thank you for calling in. I know that's a tough one. Not everybody knows Selena Gomez, but we're glad that you do.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Cynthia stayed up late, and she's listening to the show, and she won some Twilight Zone CDs.
See how it's done?
See, that's how it works.
Of course, you have to know Selena Gomez, too.
Yeah, well, she knew it. Well, it's time for Lum and Abner. This was a comedy series created by and starring Chester Locke and Norris Goff. It came to radio way back in 1931, and it lasted all the way to 1954. Now, they were modeled on life in the small town of Waters, Arkansas, which is near where they actually grew up. In 1936, the town of Waters, Lisa, changed its name to Pine Ridge after the show's fictional town. Believe it or not,
wow.
That's how much power they had. They co-owned on the show the Jot'em Down store, which was visited by the many town's folks, including Squire Skimp, Grandpappy Spears, Cedric Weehunt, and Dick Huddleston. Originally a 15-minute show Monday through Friday, it changed to a weekly 30-minute format in 1948, but then changed back to a quarter hour daily in 1953. Lasted 5,000 episodes, these guys. Chester Locke and Norris Goff. Very popular.
Right.
Yeah. The 15-minute series was really sort of what everybody remembers. This half-hour series was just, as I say, one season. But I have an episode for you now from November 7th, 1948. This is called, the title of this episode is called Bulldogging Lum. Here's part one now of Lum and Abner.
Granny's, Abner. I believe that's our ring.
Oh.
Frigidaire presents the new Lum and Abner Show. Tonight, Frigidaire, a division of General Motors, brings you a brand new kind of visit with those old characters down in Pine Ridge. Featuring Clarence Hartzell as Ben Withers, the music of Felix Mills, and starring your old favorites, Lum and Abner. As we look in on the little community of Pine Ridge today, we find the old fellows in their Jot'em Down store. Lum is staring out the front window. Listen.
Granny's, Abner, look out in front of the store there. Look at what Ezra Seastrunk just drove up.
Yeah, that's quite a paint job.
I don't mean the car. I mean the woman that's with Ezra.
So do I.
Granny, she's as pretty as a speckled pup under a brand new wagon. Reckon who that is, anyway?
Oh, that must be Ezra's wife's cousin from London.
From London?
London, Ohio.
Oh.
She's been here a couple of days now.
I wonder why it is she ain't never met me yet.
Maybe she's just naturally lucky.
Well, howdy, Ezra, old boy. Old friend, it sure is good to see you. Yes, sir, sir.
Lum, I want a... what I want is a... Oh, well, dadgummit, might as well come right out and say it. I want a hairnet.
A hairnet?
What size do you take, Ezra?
Oh, it ain't for me. Yes, for that dadgum cousin of mine. Now, that there woman's gonna drive me crazy.
Yeah, she does look nice. I just happened to casual notice her sitting out there in the car.
Yeah. Well, you can shove your eyes back in their sockets now.
Ezra, is your cousin married to anybody?
Yeah. Anybody. She's in between husbands right now. She come out here to grieve over her last one. She lost him in a 6-day bicycle race.
What a terrible shame.
When the 6 days was up, he kept right on a-going.
Bad breaks, huh?
Yeah, and the worst one was when he met her. Better get me that there hairnet, Abner.
Yeah, all right. What color, yeller?
Yeller? Abner, I'm surprised at you. Can't you see she's got radiant golden hair touched by the sun's glimmering rays and gilded by the delicate petals of the dainty goldenrod? Now, do you know what color?
Yeah, one yellow hairnet.
How long's your cousin going to be in town, Ezra?
No telling. Next Friday, I got to take her to that gum rodeo over at Mount Ida.
Oh, does she like rodeos?
Jeez, Hank, she does. This year's the first time she's ever been west of the Ohio River. And she says she's clean plumb out the wild and woolly west.
Well, I do know.
Keeps expecting to see cowboys right here in the city. Sets around a-raving about how much she loves cowboys.
Oh. Loves cowboys, huh?
Hmm. Oh, for Pete's sake, here she comes. Studied up something to jaw me about, I reckon.
You know, I ain't had the pleasure of meeting your cousin.
Well, I ain't had a whole lot of pleasure in it myself.
Hurry up, Israel. I can't sit out in that car all day while you're...
Yeah, sure. Rowena, this here fella here don't know you, so he wants to meet you. Shake hands with Lum Edwards and get over with.
Well, I'm charmed indeed, but charmed.
Howdy, ma'am. Welcome to the wide open west. If any of the hombres around here gets a little rough, just call on old Cactus Lum Edwards.
Oh, Mr. Edwards, are you a cowboy?
Well, I admit I don't look much like it in this here outfit, but there ain't no one thing I'd rather do than put on a set of chaps and a cartridge belt and a bandana handkerchief.
Yellow hairnet. Here you are, ma'am.
Oh, thank you.
Come on, Rowena. Let's go.
Miss Rowena, I'm sorry I ain't got old Paint saddled up so as we could ride out and see the sagebrush bristling in the old corral.
Oh, it sounds exciting, but exciting.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's a beautiful sight. Special at night with the yuccas howling in the underbrush. And the pampas is running through the grass.
Oh, wonderful. You know, I have never seen a real live pampas.
Well, very few of us ever have.
Rowena, you got your hairnet. Now let's go.
Mr. Edwards, if it isn't too much to do in the next few days, would you sort of show little old city-fied me around?
Hmm? Well,
if you ain't got too much to do for the next 6 days, I'd suggest you get yourself a bicycle.
Now, Rowena,
shut up, Ezra, shut up. Mr. Edwards, if it isn't asking too much, I would love to see you bulldog a steer.
So would I.
You can do it, can't you?
Can I? Miss Rowena, I don't like to stand here and tell you things that don't sound true.
Then cut it out.
You keep out of this. I've bulldogged 2 steers at 1 inning. Match.
Oh, good gracious.
that?
Well, it's a little hard to explain.
Yes, it is.
Well, you see, there was me over here and the two steers over there.
Yeah.
Well, from there on, it was just a matter of pitting brains against muscle.
Well, you just let the two steers fight it out twixt themselves.
I told you to keep out of this.
Which one was the brainy steer?
Yeah. Stop interrupting me. Speaking of cows, Miss Rowena...
I beg your pardon?
I recollect when I was just a kid of a boy.
What a memory.
Admiral, will you hush up? I recollect when I was just a kid of a boy, I wrangled on every ranch west of the Mississippi.
Couldn't get along with them no place, huh?
Then there was a time when I was working on the Circle Two-Step Ranch.
Well, I don't know about you, Rooney, but I'm getting out of here. You can bring the car with you.
Can't you take it?
No, I can't take it. That's why I'm leaving.
Mr. Edwards, with your rash courage and, shall we say, foolhardiness...
Yes, let's.
It's a wonder you haven't been trampled to death by now.
It is a wonder. I've been tempted to do it myself.
Mr. Edwards, I'm going to ask you something, and I just simply will not take no for an answer.
Well, Granny, this is kind of sudden, ain't it?
If you're as skillful as you say, I'm going to enter you in the Mount Ida Rodeo. In the bulldogging contest.
Huh?
I'm going to go and send in the entry fee right now. Toodaloo, Cactus.
Well, now you did it, Junior.
Abner, don't just sit there and read the paper. Don't you realize what trouble I'm in with this bulldogging contest?
Oh, you don't need to worry about that, Cactus, old wrangler like you.
Now, listen.
That ought to be a waltz for you after your experience at the Circle Two-Step.
Cut it out, Abner. I'm in serious trouble here.
Well, I'll get your mind off your troubles. Now, here's the interesting article. Emmett Goshen of North of Pine Ridge was so unfortunate as to get kicked by a cow Saturday.
Abner, don't bring up the word cow around me.
Dr. Miller patched up the broken ribs.
Abner, cut it out.
And Emmett was reported in a serious condition at this writing.
Yeah, and you're going to be in a serious condition, too, if you don't stop that reading.
Lum, I'm trying to make you feel better.
Well, cut it out. I can't stand it. You've just got to help me study up some way to get out. Oh, for goodness sake, here comes that Squire Skimp. Wish he'd stay out of here.
Well, good afternoon, Lum. I just heard that you'd been entered in a rodeo, so I think we better renew your accident insurance. Lum, now here's a nice policy for you right here. It guarantees you total disability.
So does the rodeo.
Squire, did you see this article? Emmett Goshen was so unfortunate as to get kicked by a cow.
Abner, will you hash that up?
Now, here's a policy that provides for hospitalization for 60 days.
60 days?
Well, that's as long as you can get, Lum. You see, the company's found out if you aren't out of the hospital in 60 days, you have nothing to worry about.
Oh?
The company then deals directly with your next of kin.
Uh-oh.
Dr. Miller patched up the broken ribs.
Abner, cut out that reading.
Would you rather have me sing?
I don't care. Just don't read. Now then.
Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie.
Abner, I'm going to cut that out. I'm going to walk you right on top of the
head. Hey, Lum, let go of me. Here comes Ben Withers. Put me down. Oh!
Hello, Lum. Practicing your bulldogging?
Oh. Howdy, Ben.
Fine. Lum, I just heard from Howard K. Sutler of Mount Ida.
Well, what of it?
Yeah. He wanted me to contact you.
Me? I don't even know him.
Howard is in the mortician game.
Lum, I'd like to get this insurance settled first.
R.K. Sutler has been put in charge of the Mount Ida Rodeo, and he wanted me to tell you to be in Mount Ida early Friday morning.
Oh, I see.
You're to go direct to the funeral parlor.
Funeral parlor?
Well, that would save them holding you back over there later. seems to me like they ought to give you a chance first, though.
That's where Howard House is rodeo headquarters.
Oh, I was going to say.
They'll make final arrangements for you there.
Final arrangements? Granny Ben, ain't there some other way you could put that?
Fine.
You know, there's a strong possibility I might get called away to San Francisco that day and not be able to make the rodeo at all.
Better smile when you say that, Cactus, because here comes your little prairie flower.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Edwards, oh, I have some wonderful news, but wonderful. Your entry has been accepted.
Yeah, Ben's already bring me the jolly tidings.
But I'm very disappointed because they put you first in the bulldogging contest.
First?
Oh, that's a shame. Now you won't get to see the show.
That's the first portion of the Lom and Abner Show. More coming your way after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Boy, if I had a voice like Bill Curtis.
What would you do?
I would be doing a lot more radio and TV voiceover.
You're doing plenty. You got enough.
I'd have a gig. A paying gig.
You have a gig, and it pays.
Bill Curtis.
It pays.
He's the best in the business.
Yes, he is.
And he was kind enough to do our rejoins.
Yeah, I know.
What
I
does
was
that
pretty
say
excited about, that.
About us? He must either
they paid him,
paid
the
him
big
a big, a whole ton of money. No, it's nice. I mean, Bill Curtis is the sort of the signature voice here of WGN, and that's quite an honor to be working with him. You keep meeting him everywhere you go.
He shows up at the openings. Who knows? Maybe I'll see him tomorrow.
Is that Trader Joe's?
No, I did not see him at Trader Joe's.
I'm always on the lookout for him. I never see him.
You got to show up at the openings of the theaters. It's a Goodman tonight, a Christmas Carol. Maybe he'll be there.
Probably will.
He's probably listening to me right now.
Yeah,
so. He's
following you on Twitter or whatever that.
Whatever
a Twitter is.
Yeah.
I don't want a Twitter.
I don't have a Twitter account.
All right. So we're listening to Lom and Abner, November 7th, 1948. Let's get back to it right now.
Well, I found out that they start off with the poorest riders and the tamest steers and save the real wild steers for the good riders later on.
Yes, that's the way they handle it, yes.
Mr. Edwards, you have been insulted.
Oh, well, that's all right. I'm broad-minded.
Oh, but if I were you, with all your ability, I wouldn't stand for it.
Aye, grannies, I won't. I'll withdraw out of the contest right now.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
Nobody insults Cactus Lum and gets away with it. Ben, call your friend in Mount Ida and tell him to count me out.
Well, all right, I'll get him. But I hate to see you drop out. Hello, Mamie. This is Ben Withers, and I want to talk to Howard K. Sutler at the Mount Ida Funeral Parlor. Yes, rush it through, Mamie.
Very odd. He's trying to pull a stunt like that on old Cactus Lum Edwards.
Oh, I'm disappointed you're withdrawing. I knew you'd repulse the idea, but I never thought you'd go this far.
Oh, you ain't got no idea just how repulsive he can be.
Hello, that's you, Howard? Well, this is Ben Withers, and I want to talk to you about Mr. Edwards. No, I mean in regard to your other business. He's dissatisfied with the number one position and is withdrawing.
Dead blame right. That stuff's for sissies.
Yeah, you'd better not risk it.
Yes, I see, Howard. Well, that's the way he wants it. All right, I'll tell him. Good boy. Howard says he'll take you out of there.
Good. Serves him right.
And he's making you number 13.
Doing what?
That puts you last on the program. Now you'll be sure to get the wildest steer they've got.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Fine.
I'm old cowhand from the Rio Grande.
Catch up that awful singing, Abner. Did you have to keep reminding me of this fix I'm in? Now go on reading me that accident insurance policy.
This policy provides indemnity for loss of limb.
Oh, me.
and other specified losses caused by bodily injuries effected through accident. Accident? Mom, you're doing this a purpose. And the company further specifies that accidents occurring in the air... Oh, well, this part's all right, Lum. You won't get hurt till you land, anyway.
Exactly. You want me to get hurt.
Well, no, Lum. This was your idea. You brung the whole thing up yourself, you know. I never had no... Wait just a minute. Yeah, that's our ring. Maybe that's a feller from a liver stable with the practice horse. I'll get it.
Now, wait a minute. There comes old Meter Miser.
Hello, boys. How are my favorite Frigidaire dealers today?
Hello, Mr. Niles.
Oh, we're feeling great, just like a Frigidaire, cold and white.
Never mind, Abner. I'm closer. Let me answer. Hello? Yes, this is the Jot 'em Down store. What's that? What should you do with the plug? Why, mister, just push it into any electric outlet, and it'll be off and running. What do you mean, knock her cold? Why, cold's just the thing you want when you get a refrigerator.
Mr. Niles, this is a matter of horses.
Now, just a minute, brother. What do you mean, horses? You mean horsepower. Say, when you have a piece of mechanism as simple as a Meter Miser, you get power and plenty of it without big, complicated pieces of machinery. Why, do you realize that the Meter Miser in a Frigidaire refrigerator is no bigger than a derby hat? Yet it has enough power to provide all the cold you need for everything you want to keep, even in the hottest weather. And let me tell you one thing more. Only Frigidaire has the Meter Miser, and it's the simplest cold maker ever built.
But, Mr. Niles, he's talking about our four-footed friend.
4 feet, nothing. Why, do you know that today Frigidaire has a big 11-foot model? That's right. I said 11 feet. What do you mean you never saw an 11-foot model? Well, there's one on display right here that's a beauty. Now, come on over and have a look. It's so compactly built, so beautifully designed, that you'll be surprised at all the food she holds. Up to 50 pounds of frozen foods, dozens of eggs, and plenty of ice cubes.
Yeah, you never get a horse to eat that.
What's that? You're coming right over. Oh, that's fine. I'll be waiting to show her to you. Well, I guess you set him straight.
Mr. Niles, that was the liver stable man. He's got a horse I'm supposed to practice riding on.
Oh, I knew it was a horse all the time, but to me, a plug is a plug.
Up, Abner, help me get into this cowboy get-up. We got to be leaving for Mount Ida in a few minutes.
Well, Lum, are you sure this Ida here is going to work? What if Cedric's car don't break down on the way over there?
Don't worry. I'll fix the car so it will.
Oh.
We'll start out for Mount Ida, all right, but we'll never get there. Now, hurry up and help me get this cowboy jumped on.
Well, if you ain't ever going to get there, what do you need to get dressed up for?
Because I want Miss Rowena to see me when I start out.
Oh, Lord.
I want to show her I ain't scared to go over there. What do you think I am, a coward? Let's see now. I'll try on this cowboy hat first. Hey, where'd you go, Abner?
The hat slipped clean down over your eye. Dogies, what size is that thing anyway?
I don't know. All I know is the man told me it was a 10-gallon hat.
Maybe you just got a 3-gallon head.
I reckon I could stuff a few newspapers in there. Couple of magazines.
Yeah, say, Lum, I was just thinking, when we're broke down out there on the road, what if Ezra and Miss Rowena comes along and gives us a lift?
Well, we're going to take a different road.
Oh.
Stop worrying. I've got this all figured out to where nothing can go wrong. It's foolproof.
Say, Lum.
Oh, howdy, Ben, old boy.
I talked by telephone to Howard K. Sutler early this morning.
Good. I hope you told him I'm raring to go, and I hope he's got a good ferocious steer lined up for me.
Oh, he has. He wanted me to tell you that inasmuch as you are now the star attraction...
Yeah?
He's sending over a car for you.
Huh?
Wants you to be sure and get there. Well, I'm going outside and watch for the driver. He ought to be arriving any minute.
Got it all figured out, huh?
Oh, shut up.
Care for a hazelnut?
Abner, cut out trying to be funny. Don't you realize I'm heading for destruction?
Well, it's safer than heading for Mount Ida.
Abner, what am I going to do? I can't go over there and bulldog no steer.
Well, you've got to make a stab at it now.
Yeah, I'm just feared the steer will stab first.
I'll tell you, Lump, when you ride out there on the horse, well, don't jump on the steer. Just stay on the horse. Keep chasing the steer around till he gets tired. Maybe he'll fall down.
Only trouble is, I don't think I can stick on the horse that long.
Well, let's see. Maybe we could glue your britches to the saddle.
But if the horse gets to bucking, he'll throw me clean out of him.
Oh.
No, I'll never be able to stick on a horse light as I am. Wished I was heavier.
Yeah, you don't carry a whole lot of weight, I've noticed.
Wait a minute. Carry weight? I believe you've given me an idea there.
Well, good for me.
Yeah, I'll just fill my boots with something heavy, like stove poles. Them things are heavier than lead.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Them boots you bought are big enough to hold a ton of that stuff.
Here's a box of stove poles right here. This ought to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Abner, would you care to pour?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, Al, don't pour so fast.
How many lumps or bolts do you take?
Take it easy. I'm liable to give you a couple of lumps. Uh-oh, there comes Ben back. Now, don't tell him nothing about this.
No.
Don't tell nobody.
No. I think I see the car coming down the road a ways. Are you ready, Lum? Yeah, come on, Lum. Let's get out there.
All right. Granny,
that's hard to walk.
Seem a little heavy of foot this morning, Cactus. Do you feel all right?
Well, right now I'm a little stove up.
That's too bad. I'd hate to have anything happen to you now. It'd be hard to get somebody to fill your boots. It weren't so hard.
Hey.
Maybe you've been overworking. Better take some raisins along to munch on during the trip.
Raisins?
Yes, give you strength. You know the slogan, have you had your iron today? He's loaded with it. Well, I hope you get to feeling all right, Cactus, because we all want you to get out there and show your mettle.
Huh?
If he does, he's sunk. Oh, by the way, Cactus, there's a possibility that you'll be moved up from number 13 to 12.
Well, that sounds like a safer number.
The reason is one of the contestants was practicing bulldogging last evening and got quite considerably mangled.
Mangled, did you say?
Oh, there's the hearse out there for you now, Lon.
Hearse? Is that what I'm going to ride in?
Yeah. Howard sent over his best one for you.
Oh, me.
Doggies, that's the longest, blackest thing I ever seen. Howard said you'd have a good, comfortable ride. Yeah, you can lay down in it, Lone. Well, come on, Cactus, let's go.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Does he have to do that?
Do what?
Can't he just park it? Does he have to back it up to the door?
Isn't it simply wonderful? But wonderful.
I guess so.
Oh, Abner, what was the number of that last bulldozer? The one they just carried off.
I don't know. I'm trying not to look. According to my program, Miss Rowena, that was number 11.
Oh, hooray. Mr. Edwards is next.
Yeah, hooray. Well, I gotta see the sheriff before I believe it. I don't think Lum will have enough nerve to get on the horse, even. Oh, yeah, he's done on it. I was down there and helped him get on it.
There he is. There's Cactus in the shoes.
My stars, I didn't know he could do that. Look, Cactus is on the horse backwards. I don't doubt it. I thought you said you helped him to get on, Abner. Well, I did, but I just felt so terrible about this, I just couldn't stand to watch. Had my eyes shut and... Well, I know Lums were shut. He ain't opened them since we left Pine Ridge. I think they're going to turn him around. Nope. Too late. There he goes.
Go to it, Cactus!
Oh, poor Lum. Stars, look at that man go.
And there goes number 12, Cactus Lum Edwards. And this is really a novelty. This is the first time any man has attempted bulldogging by riding his horse backwards.
Oh, isn't he marvelous? But marvelous.
happening?
What's happening to him, Ben? I can't stand to watch.
I think he's breaking a few precedents.
Well, I knowed he'd break something. Is he still on the horse?
On it. He's a good 10 feet ahead of him.
He's on the steer. He's on the steer.
It all happened so fast, I can't tell you exactly what took place. All I know is the steer is lying there in the middle of the arena, and walking toward the chute is the new bulldogging champion, Cactus Mom Edwards!
Oh, Cactus, you were superb, but... superb. You were simply magnificent, but magnificent.
Oh, for nothing, but nothing.
How in the world did you ever throw that horrible beast so quickly?
Oh, I just leaped through the air, grabbed him by the horns, got a headlock on his head and a fetlock on his feet, nailed him down with a hammerlock, and buttoned him up with a button hook.
Cactus, I had no idea that was how it was done.
Neither did I.
Oh, excuse me a minute, Cactus. There's one of the judges. I want to collect our prize money from him, and you wait here for me.
Yeah.
All right, Lum, now she's gone. Just how did you do it?
Well, Abner, to be right honest, I never bulldogged him.
Huh?
That horse throwed me a good 30 foot in the air. When I come down on that steer's head, my foot full of bolts knocked him out.
Sort of affected both of you. Yeah.
It addled me a little.
Well, I'll be a polka-dotted possum. Dog is long, maybe you've learned something about bulldogging.
I sure have. Stay away from it. From now on, there's two things I'm giving up for good. Bragging and bulldogging.
Oh, Cactus! Cactus! There's a newspaper reporter here, and he wants to know what the secret of your amazing ability is. What shall I tell him?
Why, tell him,
Careful, Lum.
Tell him the secret of old Cactus Lum Eddard's amazing success is... have plenty of metal and always keep your boots on.
Lum & Abner Show is brought to you each week by the Frigidaire Division of General Motors, manufacturers of a complete line of home appliances. Don't forget, next week, this is Wendell Niles saying goodnight for Frigidaire, America's number one refrigerator. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Lum & Abner Show, November 7th, 1948. Bulldogging Lum with Chester Locke and Nora Scoff. Hope you enjoyed that.